Lot.
I'd like to open the judiciary hearing for Tuesday, May 12, 2009. If you'll look at the public hearings list, we're going to go straight down the bill list as posted from 2187 down to 2360, and we'll be doing work sessions last. With that, I want to open a public hearing on 2187A. Council?
House Bill 2187A allows the Oregon Youth Authority to request fingerprints of applicants to operate youth offender foster homes or adult member of the applicant's household for purposes of a criminal record check. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued.
Thank you, Counselor. Somebody start coming forward because they know who's going to testify. Mr. Cox, I believe.
Good morning. Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Philip Cox. I'm Assistant Director of the Oregon Youth Authority for Program Services. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 2187, introduced by Governor Kulongoski on behalf of the Youth Authority. House Bill 2187 was introduced to clarify in statute the authority of the Youth Authority to carry out fingerprint criminal background checks on persons who apply to operate youth offender foster homes and adults who are members of the applicant's household. Currently, ORS 420A.021 provides the agency with the authority to provide or to require, fingerprint criminal background checks on employees, applicants for OYA employment, and vendors, volunteers, and OYA contractors. This bill affirms the authority of the agency to require fingerprint criminal background checks on adults who are charged with providing guidance and care for youth offenders placed in their private homes. This agency has historically conducted fingerprint background checks on these persons as contractors. However, we are seeking statutory clarity in this area, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions you or the committee members might have.
Thank you, Ms. Cox. Questions? You got off easy. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on 2187A? If not, I'm going to close the hearing on 2187A and open a public hearing on House Bill 2224. Councilor?
House Bill 2224 broadens the authority of the State Department of Fish and Wildlife to require fingerprinting for purposes of criminal records checks to additional groups of people. Those people include persons who reside on department property, who have access to confidential information, who handle money, property, mail, or audits, who have access to persons' private information, and or people who have access to tax or financial information about individuals or business entities.
Thank you, Counselor. I guess it's Ms. Burns. And are you coming up, Kurt? Okay. Whoever's going to lead, go ahead.
Thank you, Vice Chair Boquist, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. With me, I have Roxy Burns, our Human Resources Administrator. Appreciate the opportunity to be here to talk to you about House Bill 2224. House Bill 2224 would expand the department's authority to conduct criminal background checks on vendors, volunteers, employees, and prospective employees in areas currently not covered under existing statute. These employees that we're asking for the authority to conduct criminal background checks on would include those that perform payroll functions, have responsibility for financial transactions, individuals that purchase or sell property, perform mailroom duties, perform auditing functions, or have access to sensitive information, social security numbers, dates of birth, or criminal background information for our both customers as well as employees. We have a long history of conducting criminal background checks since 1990. We began doing those on our employees that had access and used firearms in the course of their job duties.
In September 2004, we began
conducting criminal background checks on members of our information technology staff that had access to sensitive, proprietary, and other confidential data. And in July 2005, House Bill 2157 passed, which gave us the authority to conduct criminal background checks on employees and volunteers that interact with children in our hunter and angler education programs or that teach firearm instruction. The Federal Bureau of Investigation requires that we have statutory authority to actually perform these background checks. And so as we look to expand this program, we do need the statutory authority to do that. We have adopted rules that in both our employment and volunteer programs that implement the current requirements and are looking to, as I mentioned, enhance that for some of our additional employees. With that, I'd be happy to answer questions or deflect those to Ms. Burns if I can't answer them. Thank you.
Questions?
I did have one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kurt, a question about how many people do you think this would cover? Just getting a sense. I know you have a lot of employees. You have over 1,000 employees, I think. So it, generally, what's your estimate about how many people you actually think you're going to be expanding to conduct additional fingerprint?
Vice Chair Boquist, Senator Dingfelder, we do have just under 1,200 employees. Of course, we do also conduct background checks on many of our volunteers, and we have a large volume of volunteers that are active for the department, teaching hunter and angler education. I would ask Roxy here, Ms. Burns, if she knows the specific number of new positions that would be covered by this. And I would add that we would be doing this as new employees are hired, as opposed to going back retroactively. Roxy.
Senator Dingfelder, my name is Roxy Burns, HR Administrator for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. For employees, it would be approximately an additional 300 employees.
How much, I'm sorry?
300.
300.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, and Kurt, I'm assuming it's not going to cover wolves and cougar paw prints, unfortunately.
Vice Chair Boquist, I don't think we could get that in on the relating clause on this bill, but I'm sure there may be creative ways to do such a thing.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sure I've made my point.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Roxy.
Follow up?
I do have a question. If you're in the middle of something, I'll wait. Nope. I just want to make sure you welcome up. Mr. Meltzer, in your testimony, you've written your testimony, you say that this expands the authority to conduct criminal background checks on vendors, and I'm trying to find where that is in the bill. And if you could talk a little bit about which vendors you're anticipating doing the background checks on, that would be helpful.
So, Vice Chair Boquist, Senator Bonamici, I'm going to let Roxy Burns answer that. She's pointing to something on the page here for me. Oh, line 8 on the first page of Council 2224 inserts the word vendor.
Oh, I see it. Thank you.
And I believe, and I'll let Roxy add to this, but we have our licensing database, which includes many hundreds of thousands of customers, is essentially housed in the private sector. We contract out with our licensing, our actual licensing system. So we have vendors that have access to this information, and we would like them to be covered in our ability. Roxy, would you like to add anything to that?
Senator Bonamici, we actually, this bill is modeled after the Department of Consumer and Business Services. They had vendor included. We, at this point, wanted to have similar language, so we included the same language. We don't have any specific needs at this point, but as Kurt pointed out, we may in the future decide that we want to have that flexibility, but we haven't pinpointed a specific vendor or type of vendors.
No question.
Another question.
Thank you.
Follow up?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. I do have another question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kurt, has this been, I guess I'm curious if this has been a problem at the department, or is this something that you're being proactive? You know, was there an internal audit that this is in response to? I know that you used to sit on the audits committee, and I know there's been some issues you've dealt with in the past through your internal audit. So I'm curious about if this is in response to something or you're being proactive.
Vice Chair Boquist, Senator Dingfelder, this is being proactive on our part. We are not aware of any problems that we've had that this would address. However, we do think that in the future this is a good thing in keeping us in good stead and protecting our customers and our employees.
Okay.
And just one comment for the record, and it's a very similar question I asked and that Senator Dingfelter asked some time ago early in the session, and I think we passed the fingerprinting bill last session and the session before, and I think we've had a half dozen agencies so far come in with the same models trying to correct shortfalls in that fingerprinting bill that we did. It was either last session or the session before. The three of us were there. Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2224? No one's enthralled. Okay. With that, we're going to close the hearing on 2224, and we're going to open a hearing on 2063A. And you can start coming forward, because you know who you are, but I don't have the list yet.
House Bill 2063A adds employees of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission directly involved in investigations or discipline by the Commission to the list of persons required to report child abuse. This bill came from a work group in the interim that Senator Walker was involved with, and perhaps the representative of the Commission can provide some more details about that.
Ms. Chamberlain, I believe.
I chair both lists. Members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, the Executive Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. This bill came out of an interim work group that studied the issues of educator discipline as it relates to our agency and followed a series of articles out of the Oregonian. And during one of the conversations in the committee meeting, it came to people's attention that my investigators or my staff isn't required to report child abuse. In the 7 years I've been there, I cannot think of one instance when we have had knowledge or have been exposed to possible knowledge of child abuse ahead of other folks or having it been reported. But the number of folks who are reporting to our agency has almost tripled in the last 2 or 3 years. So it's very conceivable that a patron could report child abuse ahead of a school district, and we would actually receive the knowledge ahead of the mandatory reporters that are right now who are school employees. So what I did ask, however, is that it be limited to the folks who work in the area where this information comes in. The rest of two-thirds of the agency is walled off from the discipline unit, and they just never ever even see the files or anything about this. So the folks most likely to encounter the information, if it did come into our office, would be our investigative staff and folks associated with that function.
Thank you. Questions for any members? Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on HB 2063A? Not hearing any, I'm going to close the hearing on 2063A and open a hearing on 2168A.
House Bill 2168A removes outdated, unnecessary, and incorrect language from the 911 emergency communications statutes.
Ken, I'm going to let you start while we're waiting for the paper.
Thank you, Vice Chair Boquist and members of the committee. My name is Ken Murphy. I'm the Director of Oregon Emergency Management. And the majority of this bill, with two exceptions, is housekeeping and trying to update the language. Most of this is anywhere from 10 to 15 years old, and working with legislative counsel, we've done quite a few rewrites and trying to make better grammar and understanding. The two things that did change in here, one was the deletion of duplicative language from the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training on telecommunicator standards where 911 dispatchers get trained. So we left that in their ORS statutes 181 and had taken it out of this. And the other piece deals with in the accounts that the 911 money goes into, there's an enhanced sub-account that provides 35% of the money to equipment, communications equipment. And over the years, one of the first things that was put into the 911 language was to create a 2.5% account that set aside basically $500,000 to help pay for unique or unsuspected equipment purchases. And that was before we had the standard 75-cent tax on telephone lines. So we determined that we did not need that money. sub-account and then is continually distributed to the public safety answering points across the state. The rest of it, again, as you look through it, you'll see a lot of new words that have a little bit different meaning, shall versus must, and trying to make it more grammatically correct. So I will answer any questions that you may have at this time.
Colleagues, since I've missed the presentation, are there any questions to this stimulating
bill?
Great bill
should pass.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much.
Thank
you. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2168A? Not seeing anyone, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on 2168A. And
the sponsors aren't here yet for 2360.
Right. I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on 2168A. And entertain a motion regarding this bill.
Mr. Chair, move 2168A to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2168A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Dingfelder, I think you're our carrier of these catch-all bills of great importance.
Got it.
And we'll close the work session on 2168A. And what I'm going to go ahead and do is we're waiting for the sponsors or proponents for House Bill 2360 at this point.
Is that
hearing
right now?
Okay. And
we could do that. Yeah, we could do the three bills too.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and go back to the top of our public hearing and possible work session. Oh, there he is. Just in time. So what I'm going to go ahead and do is open up a public hearing on House Bill 2360. Council?
House Bill 2360 provides that only the last four digits of a person's Social Security number need to be provided in certain trust-related proceedings.
All right, thank you. Representative Roland.
Thank you, and sorry, I was testifying another bill and had to zip as soon as I got done with that one here. A local attorney who's been a lifelong friend, actually not quite lifelong, but my entire life in Coos Bay, John Woody, had came to me during the interim and said, there's one little issue that I've been working on that I think the state is consistently changing to include the last four digits of a Social Security number for identification so that identity theft doesn't happen. And so he says, currently our requires that a certification of a trust include the Social Security number of the person who creates the trust. If the person places real estate in the trust and later decides to sell it, many title companies want to have the certification recorded, which causes the trust settler's Social Security number to become a public record. House Bill 2360 provides that only the last four digits of the settler's Social Security number need to be provided in certain trust-related proceedings, thus further reducing the opportunity for identity theft. We all have to give our Social Security numbers for banks and brokerages and others, other like interests, who hold assets held in a living trust, but there is no need to have it in a public property records for any curious person to see and potentially misuse. That's basically the premise of the bill, and I would encourage your support.
All right, thank you. Questions for the representative? Not quite yet.
Should I ask him?
Go ahead if you want to ask.
I just want to make a comment, and I wanted to thank the representative for bringing this forward. I don't think we should be using Social Security numbers at all for identification.
And consistently the state is changing to the last four, and I think as we find these places, I think it's an appropriate way of dealing with the issues. But I agree, I don't think Social Security numbers need to be done. But we do need to have identification markers for people. So with that, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2360? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 2360. Open a work session on House Bill 2360.
Mr. Chair, move HB 2360 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2360 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Happy to carry it, Mr. Chair.
Any objection? So ordered, and Senator Boquist will be our carrier. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2360. Colleagues, I think what we'll do is we'll go back to the top of the list and start there. On House Bill 2187A, I'm going to start with a work session on that bill.
Mr. Chair, move 2187A to the floor with a due pass.
All right. Senator Boquist moves 2187A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Close the work session on House Bill 2187.
Carrier.
I'm going to take care of all three of them at once.
Got it.
HB 2187A, and open a work session on House Bill 2224.
Mr. Chair, move HB 2224 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2224 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So order, and close that work session, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2063A.
Mr. Chair, move HB 2063A to the floor with due pass.
And Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2360A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So order. And do you want to carry these? Or
sure. Well, I'll carry.
Okay. It's going to be a package. I'll tell you what. Y'all did all the work this morning. The chair will carry those three bills.
Get the easy one. That's all right.
All right. Okay. So, counsel, thank you.
Holy smokes, this is good. And why do we have it as a fiscal?
Correct, okay. All right, we're going to go ahead and open up our next work session. This is on House Bill 2317. Council, I want you to remind us of what we've got.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2317 is the lottery intercept bill we heard on May 4th. It requires the Oregon Lottery Commission to notify the state court administrator of any lottery winners who have delinquent accounts. It requires notice before releasing any prize greater than $600, prioritizes delinquent child support obligations over delinquent court accounts, and declares emergency effective on passage. There's no amendment. There's a revenue statement issued and a fiscal statement issued.
All right.
Mr. Chair, my only question is just so we clarify for the record. I mean, we have both the revenue impact statement and a fiscal statement. The expenditure is $38,000. It looks like revenue is actually the expenditure is $107,000. So does it need to go to Ways and Means, or does it for them to
for
put
revenue?
In the budget or revenue?
That was the question at the public hearing. Why didn't this go to Ways and Means?
Don't really have an answer, so I think you could ask for a subsequent
referral.
Yeah, why don't we put that on the record as part of the motion. My looking at this, this is other funds, so it may be that based on that plus the revenue, but it would seem to me that we should at least alert the president.
Right, that they should check so they can put it into the budget. I see it's a positive gain. All right, Mr. Chair, are you ready?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move HB 2317 to the floor with a due pass and potential subsequent referral to Ways and Means based on the President's office determination.
All right, Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2317 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent or possible subsequent referral to Ways and Means at the discretion of the President upon reviewing the bill and the revenue and the fiscal statements. Any discussion? Any objection? So order. And if this goes directly to the floor, Senator Bonamici, would you be our carrier?
I will. Thank you.
Right. And we'll close the work session on 2317, and we'll open up a work session on House Bill 2318.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2318, we heard on May 4th, that allows a person arrested for a traffic offense to have their arrest record expunged. There's no revenue impact. There's a fiscal statement issued. There's a couple amendments. I'm not sure if the chair wants me to explain those or not.
I'd say at this point, not.
Okay.
And we'll get to there. What we have here is a work session on 2318. The chair wants to, I guess, kind of go through a couple of perspectives on this. First, the chair had a bill similar to 2318 to try to accomplish the same, relief that 2318 has. There's been some discussion as to whether or not we need to have certain amendments that would allow for certain arrests to still be on the record. I've spoken with a couple of different proponents for those amendments and was not convinced that they were necessary. So I want to put on the record a few things. Number one, the bill itself is going toward arrest. It has nothing to do with the DMV records. So the Department of Motor Vehicle records that are retained by that department regarding actions that take place on a citation that's issued, and in some cases suspensions that are issued either through the department or through the courts will still be maintained and retained on the DMV records. And because of that, it does not appear that we need to have arrests that are not, let's say, going forward that result in some type of conviction or going into a diversion to be captured and retained. The other part I think is important for us to make certain is that the cuts of the bill of 2318 is dealing with situations which would be criminal in nature, not violations. So in other words, our expungement statutes already provide that violations are not expungible from a person's driving record. Accordingly, they will not be expungible by the passage of this bill. The only thing that we're looking at, as the testimony has shown, and the example I will use, is where an individual was, where individuals have been pulled over, cited slash arrested for DUI, driving under the influence of intoxicants, only to learn that the district attorney decides for whatever reason not to go forward on those cases. And at that time, there is no conviction because there's no charges that are filed, but the arrest is still there on the record. That is the purpose of this bill. With that, I know there are a couple of people here. I don't know if anyone else feels that they need to put anything else on the record, but the chair is willing to entertain that if anyone thinks they need to do so at this time. Not seeing anyone moving forward, I think we covered everything we needed to. The chair would accept a motion on 2318.
Mr. Chair, I move HB 2318 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2318 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. The chair will carry that one. And then we'll close the work session on House Bill 2318, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2269A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2269A, we heard on May 4th, that presumes that an extradition that occurs within 90 days after the date defendant has been delivered to an agent of the state has been conducted with all practicable speed. This one has no revenue impact, has minimal fiscal impact, and no amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
One question I had written in my notes is, what about other states? And I thought someone was going to get back to us on what somebody did in other states, but I don't see anything in here.
I didn't hear
that. Well, I think we're not getting the message, so if you want to just briefly tell us where we're at, if anything happened on that.
Good morning, Chair Prasansky, member of the committees. For the record, Ronell Schenkel with the Attorney General's Office. I apologize, but Senior Assistant Attorney General Michael Slauson is unable to be here today. He's out of state, and we will follow up with that information as soon as he returns. I do not have that available this morning. I apologize.
All right.
I don't have any problem with the bill if you want to.
Your choice.
I'm game with it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, move HB 2269 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2269A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And do we have a volunteer for this one? If not, I'll carry it.
You want to carry it?
I mean, I'm fine carrying it.
I prefer you to.
Okay. And the chair will carry 2269A. And everything else okay?
That's okay.
All right. So tomorrow, Wednesday, we're scheduled to be here at 8, and I think that we need to be here at 8 because we do.
Tomorrow will be a large public hearing.
Well, we're going to have a pretty good hearing. So, with smoking inside cars.
Oh, is that tomorrow?
I believe that's tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right, with that, we're adjourned until tomorrow at 8 a.m.
On a hot air here tomorrow.